Welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and professional speaker, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free Author 2.0 blueprint and lots more information at thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn from thecreativepen.com. It is the 22nd of November as I record this, and it's episode 170 of the podcast. So today I've got an interview with David Wright, who writes dark fiction serials with Sean Platt and is also one of the self-publishing podcast team, along with Sean and Johnny B. Truant, both of whom I've had on the podcast before. So I'm really excited to talk to Dave. He's on the SPP if you listen to it, and it's a brilliant show. One of my regular listens. It's not safe for work and it does have a lot of language issues, so don't listen if you're easily offended. But Dave is often sort of quieter on that show, so I was thrilled to be able to talk to him about some of the things he really cares about. Big news here. This week I was announced at a prize winning thing as one of the Guardian top 100 creative professionals in the UK, which is absolutely hilarious because I was nominated alongside JK Rowling, Ian Banks, Caitlin Moran, who are sort of British, obviously you know JK Rowling, but the others British writers, and also people like Charlie Redmayne, who's CEO of HarperCollins, and you know, some real industry luminaries. And I did not expect to win, and I did, so that's very exciting. And I think what I was quite stunned at the time, and I feel like it's a validation that the industry is, you know, is beginning to care less about the whole indie status. And it was quite good because there were a whole load of categories, you know, like music and film, theatre. And in those industries, there's not, I mean, there are indie musicians, there are indie films, you know, fashion and all of this. They were full of freelancers and people with their own businesses. And I think that's how I feel I want authors to stand with. You know, indie authors basically should stand with those people, people who are running these sort of mini businesses and doing creative stuff in the world. So yeah, that was really exciting. And and then yesterday I spoke at the Future Book Conference, which is Europe's biggest publishing conference. I think that's how they talk about it. But anyway, I spoke on attracting readers and, you know, a bit about marketing, really, alongside the new CEO of Pottermore, J.K. Rowling's company. So that was really interesting. And I got a lot of great feedback, including a few pitches from a few people about various opportunities. So you never know, contacts out of that may turn into exciting opportunities. And the more I reflect on this whole speaking thing, because I'm also... I'm doing too many things right now, but I am writing a book as well, a non-fiction book about professional speaking for creatives. And I am an introvert, and being with people is very tiring for me. It really drains my energy, but I really enjoy it and I love it, and I love the challenge of speaking. There were probably 600 people in the audience yesterday. And yeah, it was kind of the lion's den, you know. I'm an independent writer talking to all of these industry, traditional industry folks. But I want to do more speaking, and I think that personal connection is a really good way to stand out. Speaking is a good way to stand out in this very crowded digital space. And the publishing industry specifically is highly networked, so it's quite important. And this weekend I'm actually going on speaking training. I'm investing in my own abilities, and it's actually focused around TED Talk style speaking, so more motivational, which I need because I can speak for hours on marketing and, you know, business, creative business and digital branding and creative entrepreneurship. How, you know, can I speak for 14 minutes? So it's going to be a really good challenge for me. I'm also very used to speaking with slides, and I use TED Talk style slides, you know, mostly visuals, not stuffed with words. But I'm also learning to speak without slides. So this is a really good change for me. I'm also joining the PSA, the Professional Speakers Association, and I was part of the NSAA in Australia a few years ago. But basically, one of my aims in 2014 is to play a bigger game with my own speaking as well as my writing. So I really do want to be, you know, I've changed my signature to author, speaker, entrepreneur, and that really is, I think, where I want to be for next year. So, of course, with all this going on, I did let NaNoWriMo go, which is kind of sad, but I did get a good start on Delirium, and I will be getting back to my fiction in December, January, and so focusing on Delirium and the next Arcane book, which will be around the Kabbalah and Spain, Jews and Muslims and Christians in Spain in the 14th century, really interesting stuff. What else? Oh, I'm off to Inverness next weekend to speak on marketing, and exciting about that because I've never been to Inverness, never been north of Edinburgh, really. So that'll be quite exciting. Adventuring in my own country as such. And then it will be December, and it's just ridiculous how fast the year's gone. I do have some more big news coming up on December the 3rd on the blog, which is my 5th anniversary of the Creative Pen. And I will also talk about that in the next podcast. So it's a real shift in my focus and a bit of a pivot for the blog. I shall not talk more about that because I'm still finishing, you know, that big blog post about the changes and really just making sure I'm clear on what I want to do going forward. I feel that 5 years is a really good time to make some significant changes. So exciting! The podcast will definitely still go on. And in fact, I have already booked out till June 2014 with interviews. So certainly the podcast is something I will never give up. So exciting times! Anyway, let's get on with the interview. So the podcast is now sponsored by Kobo Writing Life. So here's a message from our sponsor.
Hi, this is Mark Lefebvre. I'm the director of self-publishing and author relations for Kobo, and we are very, very excited to be a sponsor of the Creative Pen podcast. Something I wanted to share with Creative Pen listeners is the fact that via Kobo Writing Life, you can set your book to free at any time for as long as you want. There's no exclusivity requests. I would advise authors, though, who are looking to set their book to free, to think about it as part of a strategy. What is your goal to set it for free? Are you looking for more readers? Are you trying to garner reviews? Or are you using this as a funnel to get people into your catalog? Come to KoboWritingLife.com, where we discuss such things, and check out the Kobo Writing Life podcast, which is also linkable from the blog. And now back to your host, Joanna Penn of the Creative Pen podcast.
Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn from thecreativepen.com, and today I'm here with David Wright. Hi Dave.
Hello.
So just as an introduction, Dave is the co-author of dark horror fiction with Sean Platt, including the series Yesterday's Gone, Z2134 and White Space, and many more. He also draws the comic strip Todd and Penguin, as well as being one third of the self-publishing podcast team. Does that about sum you up these days, Dave?
It's a start.
Well, that is a start, because now I'm going to ask you, tell us a bit more about your background and how you got into writing fiction.
I've always been writing, and I've alternated between writing and drawing since I was a child. I would go through spurts of one or the other. Most of it was an escape. I found school incredibly boring. I did not have many friends once I hit middle school and hit the awkward phase. So I just pretty much withdrew into my own fantasy world, where I would draw and write, and I'd make up comics and stuff. And that, I started doing the comic strip back in, I think, 99, and that carried through to about 2008. I haven't done it in a while. I toy with bringing it back, though, in another form. I had a newspaper job for a while where I was a reporter, and I was also an editorial cartoonist. So that I got that job originally to be a cartoonist, and then they found out I could write too. So the drawing actually kind of brought me back into writing. And if it weren't for that job, I probably would not be writing fiction right now, because that basically put me in the seat writing thousands of words a day. And, you know, I had constant deadlines. That's the first time I ever had anything like that. Before then, you know, if I was left to my own devices, it would take me a century to finish one book. So that's where it put a routine in place for me. And when the newspaper closed up in 2008, everything, you know, went to crap here. I went online and started writing. That's how I met Sean Platt, and we decided to work together. And, you know, that's how I am where I am right now.
But, I mean, that's pretty good timing, considering 2008 was when the Kindle was launched. Do you think you would have done this without self-publishing?
Well, we tried doing serials on our website and even selling directly to people, and that did not work. If it were not for Kindle, I don't know that we'd be doing this at all. That pretty much revolutionized everything. Mm. And yeah, I think it was around 2011. We were actually, you know, we were busy working and stuff. We didn't really hit Kindle till 2011. So we were, you know, early, but not that early on it.
People are going to look back at us as pioneers in 20 years' time.
Yes.
But you said a couple of things there. You mentioned that you know, you have this kind of the writing and you have the drawing. And I think you almost said there that you draw as a kind of escape and writing became this job. Do you still equate the drawing with pleasure and the writing with hard?
Whatever I'm doing for money becomes hard because that's what I have to do. And, you know, I have the deadlines and stuff. So when I was drawing, you know, that could become hard. I mean, none of them is hard as digging ditches or, you know, actual real jobs where you get up from your seat. But, you know, they're mentally taxing either way. I think drawing is probably a little bit easier for me. I don't know.
Yeah. And you also do book cover design. How do you think your visual art skills help your fiction writing?
My fiction writing? I think there's some really good scenes that I've written because I'm thinking visually. Some very scary scenes, like one of the ones, we have one in one of the seasons of Yesterday's Dawn where somebody is trapped in a truck full of people, and there is a zombie type monster aboard, and, you know, it's completely dark, and that scene is absolutely terrifying, and I think that's because I was thinking of it visually and imagining, and, you know, as a movie or TV scene, how that would play out. And we get a lot of comments on that scene in particular as being pretty scary. So
And what about dialogue? I mean, because, of course, a lot of comics have the bubbles and things. Do you think you got a lot of practice doing that?
Yes, because in comics, you have to distill everything down to its bare essence to get the point across. You can't go on and on and on in a comic and, you know, there's a rhythm and method to it. And you kind of discover that as you do comics. I don't know how much that's translated. Maybe I think it's given me an ear for dialogue that I might not have had otherwise.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. And the other thing you mentioned was this journalistic background. And the last interview on this podcast was Kerry Wilkinson, who's just written like 14 books all in, you know, like the last year. And I asked him what his secret was, and he was a journalist, similar at writing to Deadline. So is that what you find enables you to meet these crazy deadlines?
I think Sean is what helps me meet, because I don't want to let him down. We're co-writing everything together. Like I said, if left to my own devices, you know, we'd have one book out maybe. So it's not letting him down. Otherwise, I'm a perfectionist, and I would go over it all day and all night and forever and ever.
Oh, how interesting. Right, you also, I mean, you write some dark stuff. I mean, you just mentioned one of the scenes there, and you've got some nasty, nasty characters, and one of your themes is apparently children in jeopardy comes up a lot. And readers love this. Do you ever you know, where do you think this comes from as humans, this dark stuff?
Our fears, I think. I think I write about the things that terrify me. You know, sometimes I'll kind of disguise them, or maybe I'll even go back to childhood fears. I think as a father, I felt, you know, the Children in Jeopardy thing, I think, is because I'm a father. I don't know that I would have felt that before I was. And you actually have somebody else, you know, relying on you and counting on you for their life, and not being able to do anything about that at times is very hard thing to face. Like my son is in first grade now, and I'm just waiting for that whole moment where bullying becomes an issue. And I don't know what I'll do because I was bullied, and I don't know how to help him handle that. That scares me like anything. So stuff like that, and, you know, just our fears. I think it's a cathartic thing, and I think people that read, you know, horror or, you know, even some sci-fi and fantasy that's a little scarier, I think it is a cathartic sort of release to help us face our own fears.
And I mean, I'm getting a lot of comments about my latest book, Desecration, which is a lot darker than my normal stuff, and people are sort
Welcome
of,
to the dark side.
yeah, well, this is it. And I was going to ask you, as is it just because I'm a girl, people ask these questions, or do people ask you know, you seem like a nice guy. Where do you come up with this stuff?
I can't answer the whole because you're a girl thing. That seems sort of a ignorant comment. I don't know. I do think it is your personality, though. Like, if people know you as a nice person, then yeah, they might be like, "Where is that coming from?" So, fortunately, you know, I have a gruff exterior, so nobody's really all that surprised.
I mean, you do
That
have
may be
a
my mother.
yeah, but you do have a young son. So how do you keep the separation between the dark side and your child?
I don't read him my stories. I read him things that are, you know, appropriate to his age, and I don't. One of the things about childhood is, you know, you're only innocent for so long, and I don't want to do anything to damage that. You know, the world is crushing enough on its own. He'll find out on his own. So the only thing I can do is like support him as much as I can, so he'll be ready when it happens. But I don't want to scare him about that stuff. I want him to hold on to whatever, you know, beliefs he has as long as he wants them. So.
And who were your influences when you were younger that you think have come through now?
On the comic side, Charles Schulz, Berkeley Breathe, who did Bloom County, Calvin and Hobbes, Bill Watterson. Those are primary influences on the comic side. And I escaped a lot in their worlds, mostly Peanuts when I was growing up. I remember going to my grandmother's house, and they had a bunch of hardcover books of the collections from like the 50s and 60s. And I absolutely loved reading them. I would just, you know, go sit in a room by myself and read them while everybody's out talking. And I don't know, that it was magical to me. It was bringing me into another world, and that's what I've always wanted to do as a writer and artist, to bring other people into my world, a form of escape. What was the question? I got
On
lost.
your influences, so that was the comic side. What about the
Okay.
fiction?
Stephen King, Clive Barker, Dean R. Koontz are the primary, you know, influences.
Yeah, absolutely. I can identify with that. And yeah, so again, sort of on this line, and I mentioned your family because it's so interesting. And on your personal blog or your author blog, that's just you have pictures of your son. You talk very openly about your life. And it seems very authentic. You share everything. Is that deliberate? And do you draw any line with privacy?
For my own privacy, I do not draw a line. I do protect the privacy of my family. I don't feature my wife in my blog because, you know, she's a private person. My son, I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't write anything that, you know, he'd be embarrassed if he went to school and somebody had read. But I think as he gets older, I will not write about him. I don't. write about him a whole lot on that blog. I used to have a blog called bloggerdad.com, which is my first blog. And that was pretty much just about me as a father and him and, you know, that whole thing. And that was, I started that with the intention of just, you know, chronicling, you know, my first time fatherhood. And I decided with that one that, you know, once he hit elementary school, I would stop that because, you know, I didn't, you know, kids get on the internet early these days and I don't want people reading anything that he doesn't want them to read. So,
No, I find that I don't ever share my husband's name and we have a separate surname. So I think that's really important too. I was going to ask you just back on the comics. The rise of graphic novels seems to be happening online now. Do you see that comics and graphic novels are having a renaissance?
I think so. Yeah. Comics. I was, you know, I did, you know, in 99, I was one of the first web comic people. I mean, there were others before us, but I was among the first. And that it was starting to grow then. And now it's like, there seems to be a million of them. I think though that, devices like tablets, Kindle, and stuff like that are actually providing comic artists with a way to make an income that was never there before. When I was doing it, the only way you could make money really is, you know, selling to your readers, but most people, you know, they want it for free. The only way to really make money on it was through advertising. And there were only a few online comics that were killing it at advertising. And then everybody else was just kind of doing it, you know, out of the love of doing it. But now I think if you can build an audience now, you can deliver something to them that they'll want. And now there's never been a better time to be an artist or a writer.
And do you see yourself doing like a graphic novel of Yesterday's Gone?
No, that's not my style. I'm not good enough. I have a specific style. You know, it's comic strip. It's, you know, Calvin and Hobbes, Peanuts, sort of that simplistic sort of drawing. Mm-hmm. Although, you know, those guys could draw very well. But comic books are completely a different thing. I would screw it up big time.
It would be great to see, though. I mean, that interests me very much.
Yeah, someday if you know, somebody wants to partner with us or something, you know, I might make it happen.
Yeah. So let's just come to, you know, how your model works. So can you just explain serialized fiction for people who don't really get it, and also how you collaborate?
You know, serial to us, there's a few different ways serials can be described in book form. Some are breaking down a book into serialized chunks. We're actually more of delivering a TV show in book form. That was our idea when we started out in 2011. And essentially, the books are broken down into episodes, which are then collected into seasons. So each season, you know, kind of stands on its own, although there's to be continued stuff. There's stuff that continues. But we're really big on cliffhangers. So the end of each episode is a big cliffhanger that will leave you, like, mad and upset. And we love that. We love email where people are like, what? That's the best thing ever. And we started off, when we started off, KDP Select was, you know, really powerful then, and we were able to use the single episodes to, you know, get a lot of attention for ourselves, and that sold the seasons. It's changed a little bit, so we're reconsidering how we're going to do serials going forward. Maybe collecting two episodes into one book at a time. This is really getting into, you know, I don't know how much people want to hear. But basically, you know, we write like the TV shows we'd want to see, you know, on HBO, Showtime, AMC, all those things. We write it in book form since, you know, we don't have a network, so we write it. And we're big fans of serialized TV.
Yeah.
We wanted to do that in book form. The original inspiration was Stephen King's The Green Mile back in, I think, 95 or 96. I read that and I was like, I have to do this. This is awesome. I loved it. I love I love being kept waiting. I hate it and love it at the same time. And, you know, even when I was a kid, I watched soap operas. I was one of the few people, a few guys that probably did that. But I just love the whole serialized thing. And Sean and I, we collaborate on it. Each one's a little bit different. Sometimes I'm like, I'll write more and he'll edit. And other times we'll kind of do our own thing together and then get together and edit. We basically both write it together completely.
And then just to come back on the serialized fiction, you also got picked up by Amazon for Amazon serials. And I know you can't talk about anything contractual or anything, but how does that differ in terms of the reader experience from how Amazon do serials to how the rest of us have to do serials right now because the technology is not there?
The thing about the 47 North Amazon serials are that you buy one book and it is updated automatically. That is awesome. We can't do that. Our indie stuff, we have to release separate episodes. It's a big pain. So the Amazon, their serial thing is awesome. I wish they would allow it for indie authors. Because selling it in separate books, you have to go out and then buy, and then you have all these books on your device. That's not the ideal way to do it. It's what we're doing is not ideal. We would love to for people just to be able to buy one thing, and it's automatically updated. So right now we can only do that with the serials on 47 North.
And the reviews are the biggest thing, I think. It splits reviews, right?
Oh, for episodes? Yes. You basically have to beg your audience, hey, I know you already reviewed the episode. Can you please go review the season? Fortunately, we've got, I would say, more than half the readers we have will buy the full season. They'll wait for the full season. They want it all at once. They don't want to wait. And usually they review the full season. So we've been kind of lucky there. But early on, a lot of people were reviewing the episodes as they came out. Now, people rarely review the episodes. They mostly review the full season. But yes, it's all very cumbersome. And I hate having to ask the audience or explain to them how, you know, okay, I know you did this, but can you now do that? It's just a big pain. People ought to be able to read the book and enjoy it and whatever. Yeah,
and managing the books on the back end as well, all the different...
I hate that.
Yeah. I mean, I hate it, and I've only got about 8 books. I mean, and you guys have got bazillions.
Yeah.
You really have. Now, just on the collaboration, because I'm a total control freak, I really want what you have with Sean, but I feel like it just couldn't happen for me. So what type of personality is good for this collaborative model?
It depends on your personality, I guess. You have to find somebody that compliments you. Sean and I are different. He's very optimistic and happy-go-lucky. He's like a puppy. And I am more of a cynical, guarded person, but we work well together because our weaknesses and strengths complement one another. He pulls me further than I'd want to go, and I think I protect him from some of the worst mistakes we could have made. So,
And how does ego work in it? Like whose bit was written by who? And, you know, is there any of that, or do you guys just, are you egoless?
I would say that we're very egoless. We don't worry about that. I know it is something that a lot of writers would probably have difficulty with if somebody else was getting credit for something that they wrote. Because I think any form of art is ego. And you do want to be recognized. You want to be like, you want people to say, oh, that was awesome. You did that. But at the same time, it's kind of, you know, it's kind of like a marriage or a partnership, isn't it? We did it together. Some things I did, some things he did. And I'm not very worried about who gets credit. I think people kind of, you know, they see us working together and it's those guys. So we both get credit. I suppose if I worked with a bunch of different writers, it might be a little bit different. I don't know.
Yeah, and I mean, just on that marriage analogy, I mean, it's a financial thing as well. As in, you, I mean, you guys sell loads and make so much money, and you know, this is like a long-term relationship. So did you put that all down in a contract before you even started publishing together?
No, we you know, we created an LLC, but we haven't, you know, we haven't taken all the, you know, we haven't, like, if this have no, we're sort of a handshake sort of deal. I trust Sean more than I probably trust anybody that I've met in the past few years. So I'm not worried about it. And you know, worst comes to worst, you know, we both just walk away and we do our own thing. But I'm not terribly worried about it. I think if you worry about those sorts of things, then you probably shouldn't be writing with that person.
Yeah, and I think that's the point. So if people are trying to emulate your success, then it's probably worth them doing something contractual. I mean, I am risk averse, really. So,
me too.
I've been divorced. I can understand that.
Yeah.
Were you such close friends with Sean before you went into this, or has your relationship developed? Obviously, it's developed, but did you trust him that much when you went in?
I think so, because, well, the story on how I met Sean was, he, when I had lost my job, I was considering doing some sort of newspaper column. I was even thinking about, you know, the Blogger Dad sort of thing as a newspaper column. So my initial idea was to create a website where I could start doing that, get some attention, and then sell it to newspapers. My initial idea for a domain name was writerdad.com. I went to go buy it. It was available. I went to go buy it. And then I said, no, I'm going to try something else that, you know, newspapers might be more attracted to than Writer Dad. I don't even remember the other thing I got, but I got that. And then a few weeks went by, and I'm like, I really want Writer Dad. I don't like this one. So I went back to buy it, and it was gone. And I was like, who stole my name? So I went, and it was Sean, and I wrote him an email. I said, you stole my domain, you jerk. You know, tongue-in-cheek, of course. So, but what I found was that I really liked what I was reading. We seem very similar, even though he's a little bit younger than I am. And we just started talking from there, and we hit it off, and I went and did the Blogger Dad. And, you know, we both built our own audiences on those blogs. And we started writing, and we started working together, like, you know, doing copy and stuff. All the stuff that writers do, we were doing together. And we were going through, you know, we were going through the hard times that you go through as a freelancer when you're starting up together. And everything about Sean impressed me. He's a very loyal guy, very honest guy. And that's what I look for in the people I partner with. If I can't trust them, I won't work with them. So.
Yeah,
I think I'm a pretty good judge of character. So for Sean to have, I think I had an idea of who he was basically within a month, and that was enough for me.
Right. And Sean, if you're listening, you know, he's probably blushing, but
his tail's wagging.
Yeah, I think that's really important because, you know, I think about this all the time. I listen to you guys on the podcast and I'm like, oh, I really want a collaborative, creative partner, you know, and then I just think, oh, it's really hard to find someone. And I think, you know, that if you believe in serendipity, that was serendipitous.
I don't know if I believe in that, but okay.
Yeah, you're meant to be together, Dave.
We're getting married.
Yeah. Okay, so I also wanted just one question back on blogging, because blogging goes in and out of fashion, and, you know, is it marketing? Is it writing practice? What is it for you? Why do you still like it?
It's a way to connect with your audience. I've been horribly inconsistent at blogging because I write so much. I mean, I'm writing 60, 70 hours a week. So I don't blog nearly as much as I would like to. Ideally, I would blog, you know, at least 3-4 times a week. And that's my goal, to get back to that. But it is, you know, connecting with your audience. And for writers, I think it's we're in a different position where I don't know how many people that directly read writer blogs specifically buy your books. They might want it. They might come for advice that pertains to them specifically. So not all those people will be your readers. However, I think it opens up networks, and you'll meet people that you would not otherwise meet. I mean, I'm meeting you. Chuck Wendig, Dave Gogren, Hugh Howey, all the different people we've met through our various blogging efforts. We wouldn't have met them otherwise. So it's a great chance to, you know, speak with like-minded people, and you might not get those people as readers, but I don't think it matters. And I think it will open up other opportunities for you. Like they might know somebody that might like Yesterday's Dawn or something, and they'll say, "Hey, check out this book." So in the end, I think, you know, it all helps. But you shouldn't get too bogged down with trying to get like comments and, you know,
yeah,
I would just stick with writing and eventually you'll find your audience, but don't chase comments. Don't go on other people's, you know, blogs, like searching just to get someone to come back to your blog. I mean, a lot of people say to do that and you can, I guess, but I don't, it's short-term thinking.
Yeah, that's so 2011. I got a pick up there that you said you write 60 to 70 hours a week, and that is, that's just the writing and the editing as well?
Writing, editing, it's probably the other stuff too.
Okay. I was going to say, you wouldn't be sleeping.
I don't.
I mean, you're working damn hard. I know you and Sean work really hard.
And Johnny.
Yeah, and Johnny. I have had Johnny on the podcast, so we're going to come back to the SPP threesome in a minute. But that 60, 70 hours a week, I mean, that's pretty hardcore. Do you guys do you have like a 5-year plan or a 10-year plan of where you want to be? Is that what? Because you can't sustain that for the next 50 years.
50? we have internal plans, not specific. You know, Sean is more of a planner than I am. I'm sort of a, you know, we'll just see what sort of happens kind of guy. So.
But what's your goal as a writer? I mean, do you want to be on the Forbes richest author list? Do you want to be voted for some prize?
No, I don't care about prizes at all. What I would like more than anything is to write television. I'd love to see our white space on AMC or HBO or Showtime. That to me would be awesome, to be like a showrunner for that, because, you know, we're big into serials, and we have other writing goals. Like, I want to write children's books and illustrate those, and Sean has other writing goals that he has. So we have a bunch of different goals, but if you ask me to narrow it down to one, it would be to write for television.
Yeah. No, that's great. I think everyone needs a goal. I really do. Now, let's, you know, get back to the self-publishing podcast. I'm pretty sure that most of my listeners have tried the show and either love
and
it.
And ran away screaming.
Love it or hate it. Because, I mean, I have a clean show. You guys don't. You're very funny. I'm not.
I think you're funny.
I'm interview-based and you're more chat-based. You do some interviews. But what do you, you know, just give us a bit of an overview about the podcast and what it's done for you. Why do you like it?
Initially, Sean and I were going to do a podcast. And Johnny had hit Sean up separately and said, "Hey, you want to do a podcast?" He didn't know that Sean and I were thinking about doing it. And to be honest, if Sean and I were just to do it, it probably wouldn't have happened for another year or so. But that I envision more as an interview sort of show. Johnny got involved and he's like, I'll handle the tech side of it. And he's a very networked sort of guy, so he can get things done. And Sean knew him, so I was like, okay, you trust him, I'll trust him. And it's just, I was unsure when we first started of what it would be, but it's grown into something quite awesome. And it's almost completely by accident. I don't know how much it's by design. It just seems like, you know, a happy accident. It is very, it's very laid back. We're very conversational. It really is. It's us brainstorming together, you know, everything that's worked for us, not worked for us. We get into arguments. We have people on, we get their take on things. So it's basically our journeys as writers. And if you want to listen along, you know, we've got lots of foul language, But other than that, it's a friendly show. I mean, we're not yelling at people, just each other. So.
Oh, no. I mean, I'm an avid listener. I love the show. And we should mention Johnny B. Truant, who is...
No, don't mention that guy.
We've all loved up with Sean. So Johnny is the author of Fat Vampire, the co-author of The Beam. And what's been interesting with your show, of course, is you and Sean have taken Johnny from someone who took 12 years to write one book, and he's now written again bazillions in 18 months. I mean,
yeah, I think he's writing more than I am right now.
So what I'm asking you guys is for some kind, you know, and I know you have a laugh about your $97 products and stuff, but you know, I'd love a sort of, you know, you take us all on author boot camp, we go somewhere and you help us all write 10 books in like a week.
Not interested.
But I should say, you do have something coming out, don't you? What is your book for writers?
Write, Publish, Repeat, I believe is the title of it. There is pretty much everything that we've learned over the past year and a half or so. I didn't write a whole lot of it myself. It was mostly them. I did the interviews, so I had the easy part.
But, and I mean, if you could, I mean, that's going to be available from, I think, the 5th of December. So people can get that. That will be on Amazon. That will be on Collective Inkwell, I guess.
I guess it might be there. it'll be a self-publishing podcast. Basically, it's advice for writing. But without all the, there's a ton of bad writing books on Amazon, like Get Rich Quick, schemes and telling you to do things you really should not do. It's none of that. It's all very honest, no BS sort of guide to writing. It's what works for us. So.
And I mean, Dave, you've been at this creative game a long time, and you know, you're doing all this stuff. Do you still feel like you're learning things? Like, what excites you about what's happening in the industry?
I think it's always a learning process. The whole, everything to do with all the various technologies, you know, all the platforms and such. It's an interesting time. It's very up and down. It's hard to really figure out what to do. So I'm more of a, you know, I'm just going to write, and I'm not going to worry too much about all that other stuff. There's a lot of people that worry about every single little thing, like, should I do this? Should I do that? Should I change this genre? And I can't think about that because it would just destroy my writing. So I tend not to think too much about those things. I need to keep an eye on them, and I do, you know, I read, you know, the latest news and stuff, but I don't worry too much about it. I worry mostly about writing good stories and reaching our audience. That's the number one thing that I want to do. So
No, brilliant. And if people want to try your fiction, just give us a quick rundown of what people might like.
Like what kind of books we write, or?
Yeah, like what's out there if people want to try your fiction?
Oh, Yesterday's Gone is our most successful book. That's our best-selling book to date. Sort of like The Stand meets Lost, I guess, is how a lot of people have described it. White Space is my personal favorite. It's set on a fictional island off the coast of Washington State. I can't really say what it's about. It's very mysterious. It opens up with a school shooting, but not the kind of school shooting you normally see. And it's very mysterious, sort of very paranoid vibe to it that I love, claustrophobic sort of thing. But it's also our most character-driven story. The characters in that book are very real, and people write us all the time about it. So those are the two that I, you know, most promote.
Yeah, and I've read White Space, and I loved it. It was great.
Z-2135 is our latest 47 North book. It's sort of the Walking Dead meets the Hunger Games. Z-2134, I wish we can go back and edit a little for various reasons, but Z-2135 is really awesome. But you got to read Z-2134 to get it to Z-2135. It's very hard to promote that book because the first half of it, I feel like, you know, I'd love a do-over on that. Yeah. It was a little bit rough, but it got really good in the next one. So
Fantastic. So where can people find you and your books online?
Collectiveinkwell.com. That's our books. And me, you can find it at davidwright.com.
And the podcast?
The self-publishing podcast.
.com.
.com, yes.
Oh, well, thanks ever so much for your time, Dave. That was great.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes at thecreativepen.com/podcasts. You can also get your free Author 2.0 blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at thecreativepen or find me on Facebook at thecreativepen. See you next time.